Yippee-ki-yay, beef, wine, and shenanigans in the sky. Just felt like doing a little number there for you folks. Hey, beef, wine, and shenanigans, the podcast of all podcasts. I'm Stephen Van Patten, as always, joined by Kirk Johnson and Mark Sharp as Hell Abbott. Ladies Professor and gentlemen, Abbott. Yes, looking very, very dapper. Ladies and gentlemen, last week, if you joined us, we were a little on the serious side. We were kind of in a mood thanks to the whole Rittenhouse verdict. I want to say Thanksgiving, and we hope you all had a nice one. We want to say Thanksgiving and the Ahmaud Arbery verdict has us in a slightly better mood, I say. So we're actually going to put the general angst of the political world to the side for a little while, at least until next week, where next week we will have, and I'm not going to give away, it's a surprise guest, but our surprise guest is something of a, let's just say this person got to see a little action, a little under the hood action as far as being behind the scenes during some early years with the horrible Donald Trump, unfortunate president person. So we have a kind of a political insider, so to speak, coming to the show next week. So please join us for that. You're really, really going to want to check that out. So first of all, fellas, did everybody have a nice Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
Surprisingly, it was pretty good.
Mm-hmm. I was actually in Atlanta when the verdict came out. So it was. Can't say people were like running through the streets, you know, cheering or anything, but you know, you could tell the mood was a lot more, you know, kind of like, all right, now that we got over that, let's move on. And, you know, I got a chance to go, you know, and I went to school in Atlanta, and all the time I was there, I never visited the King Center. Mm. So I got a chance to visit the King Center, picked up a copy of a book of his sermons. Mm-hmm. Everybody seems to always know the I Have a Dream speech, but he's written a lot of his sermons and his letters and everything. A lot of people don't really delve into those. So there's a particular sermon that I was looking for that I found in this book that he had. So I picked it up and visited his birth, where he grew up at, his birth house. And it was a good trip.
Good.
Get away for a minute.
Good. As for me, I didn't get into any arguments and I was not criticized. So that in and of itself makes it a good Thanksgiving for me. So moving on. I figured since we're not going to get too deep into current affairs, we're going to maybe talk about a Netflix sensation, a little something called Squid Game, a little something that if you are Mark Abbott, Kirk Johnson, or Stephen Van Patten, and somebody asks, you saw Squid Game, right? And you're like, no. Then they look at you funny because it's like, aren't you supposed to be, you know, horror sci-fi motherfucker and blah, 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 blah. So then you go see Squid Game and you sit through all 9 episodes of that.
And then after you punch like, that person in the lip?
Yes. Well, yeah, okay. That goes without saying.
For calling you motherfucker out of your name.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Fuck that. Yeah.
Punch him right here.
Yeah. Mm. So, I'll just say my quick piece about it before we get into any spoilers or anything too heavy. Uh-oh. Did I lose you guys for a hot second?
interesting concept.
Yeah.
Yes. Very interesting concept. And I,
you know, go ahead, Stephen.
No, what I was going to say is I enjoyed it all the way till the end. And then I had issues with the, I had big issues with the ending.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. But Mark, you know, let's hear how you felt first before I start getting into.
You know, I enjoyed it for what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that it didn't go down the road I thought it was going to go down. You know, the mm-hmm. way it starts out, I actually did think like the entire show was about them playing the actual Squid Game. I thought mm-hmm. it was going to be like variations of it. One thing I do have to say is now I know why we always lost at tug of war. Like if I knew then what I found out on this show, I was like, man, I could have beat a whole lot of people from the mm-hmm. way that whole concept went down. You know, it reminded me a lot of, in a dark way, Stephen King's story when he wrote his Richard Bachman, The Long Walk. Mm. And a little bit of The Running Man, mm-hmm. in the sense mm-hmm. of, you know, you're put into this situation. It's always the same thing. You know, it's you could win all this money. You know, they don't really tell you exactly what's going to go down until you get involved in it.
Right.
And then it becomes a situation like when that one moment when they allowed everybody to leave. I was kind of scratching my head because I was like, huh, they're just going to let y'all go, huh? It's just because, you know, because I'm thinking, yeah, y'all going to make it to the front door and it's going to be like Cube. It's going to be like y'all going to walk into something else and y'all ain't going to be, you know.
Yeah.
But that was kind of interesting that, you know.
You got the Goldfinger treatment.
That, but then I would like, not for nothing, I'd like to know what happened to the people who didn't come back. Because not everybody came back. They did say there was some folk that didn't return.
Yeah, like I like.
So I wonder.
I'm trying to remember the numbers, but I think it's like 20 of them.
So I'm wondering what did they do to change that? Because I'm sure that was an eye opener for them, and they were like, "Look, I need to clean up my life because I'm not going back into that into that situation again."
I need to get my life.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. And then you watch this thing, you start to wonder yourself, now how many of these could I have actually gotten through? You know.
Mm.
I mean, the red light, green light, possibly. Although there were some folks that didn't look like they moved and they got it anyway. I don't think I would have made it past the glass floor. I think that would have been the one. Yeah. I think that would have been the one that would have got me. Or even having to turn that. Now that was because every show like that has that one episode that just it gets you.
Yeah.
And that episode when they all had to trick each other, you know, the
marbles.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh,
that was a tough episode because it was just like, wow, because this is the problem when you have situation like this, you make friends.
Yep.
Then what happens when it's only the two of you? What happens when you get to that point where it's like, look, one of us is going to have to do the other one in, you know, and, you know, how do you come to that rationalization?
But yeah. There was one team that was a married couple.
Yes.
And I'm like, yo, really? We doing this?
Yes.
Like, oh, shit.
Although Homegirl was my favorite, though. The one that couldn't get anybody to be her partner.
Oh, yeah.
And Homeboy comes back in there, all Rico Suave, like, yeah, I got that. And then she shows up. She's like, yep. Mm-hmm. I was the one that they was like the one that didn't get picked. And it's just like when you were kids, if you didn't get paid, you just sit on the sidelines and wait to the next game. So, I mean, I enjoyed it for what it was.
I'm the one that didn't get picked. No, just kidding. shout out to Tony Baker. Okay, so we already kind of gave away a little bit. And for those that don't know the full premise or the basics of it, basically a bunch of people who are, for whatever reason, in a world of debt, agree to participate in this series of what turns out to be lethal games on some deserted island off the coast of Korea or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's a really jarring look at the human spirit in a way, you know? And it was disturbing. A lot of people get shot. As you can gather from the trailer. So I'm not really giving away much here, but I'm about to now. So forgive me. And normally I don't want to do the spoiler thing, but it's been out for a while. It's got an SNL skit. So, you know, it's like
crying out loud. Right.
Yeah. It's like, come on, you know? So here's my problem. And Mark, you please, I really want to hear what you have to say about this. So the one guy wins. Okay, he wins. So he then, and first of all, you made promises to people as far as taking care of little kids. You got your own kid to deal with. You know, you may have some debts in the family or whatever, but you know, it's kind of like that line from Donnie Brasco. You got an answer. That's how I look at it. And so instead of handling business, my man wanders around growing his hair out like he's in Coldplay for like a year and doesn't do jack of what he was supposed to do. And then gets in his feelings when he finds out, and I'm not going to give this away completely, but he finds out certain things about the people that set the whole thing up in the first place and gets so worked up that he doesn't even go deal with his child. He now decides he's fucking Don Quixote and he's going to go after these people. After you already done one, you done lived, a whole bunch of people have died. It's like it just that and the hair color thing that you see when you watch the thing, like that's kind of where I got lost. That's kind of where I was like, my man, I understand being mad, but there's a such thing as having priorities. And that's where I suffered a massive disconnect right around that. So I don't know how you guys felt, but that's where I'm at.
Is that a thing where, I mean, from what we see from his character in terms of, you know, he's just traumatized to such an extent of seeing like I guess, you know, he doesn't take it as well as the motherfuckers in Survivor. You know, but Survivor don't kill nobody. So imagine if all that shit go on in Survivor or Big Brother we always watch, that people watch.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the loser actually just gets taken out, gets dead on TV.
Mm.
And I just say I wonder about the trauma that he goes through, the mental instability of seeing what he saw and knowing that there's things that happened they didn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
And how that plays on him as a human being.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? I just wonder about that. That's what do you think, Mark?
I think I agree. I think there is also a moral obligation that he that went kind of beyond everything that he promised to do. Because I mean, you put it in this terms, after everything you've done, he wasn't that guy. Right. He wasn't the guy that, like, the gangster. That dude would have walked out there, got his money, tailored suits, new car, drove the streets, you know, because, you know, that was his makeup. Mm-hmm. He literally was doing this because he felt he had no other choice. I mean, think about what happened when he came home, what happened with his mom, mm-hmm. What, you know, what he had to tell the guy, the last person he has to confront in the games. He has to go to this cat's mother, mm-hmm. and kind of not tell her everything that went down. And then I also think there was a part of him that was probably scared to spend the money. There was probably a thing where he might have thought, you know what, as crazy as these fools are, I might spend a dime and something else might happen to me. And so it's almost like people who win the lot. There have been people who have won the lottery, and because you have a year to collect the money, mm-hmm. will spend a year trying to plan out exactly what they're going to do with it before they get it. As opposed to Joe on the corner, oh, I won $30 million, run straight down to the lottery office, grab that cash, 2.5 years later, sitting there broke, not and confused as to what I just did with all of the money.
Yeah.
The thing that just got me was the last decision he made. Uh-huh. And in my mind, I'm like, I'm not sure how you think you're going to fix this problem. Because yeah. the thing is, you're talking about trying to stop a group of people who are giving desperate people an actual option. You know, some of those folk were like, look, I'd rather be dead than to continue to live the life that I live right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the simple fact that half that crew came back after dude was like, yo, we need to know. Let's get out of here. Let's go back. And them folks were like, nah, I'd rather go back and suffer than to and throw my dice down the crap table. So I don't know how he thinks that's going to work or what his plan is. But I was salty with him myself because I'm like, dude, Kat, your girl and some other dude just ran off with your kid. And you literally can waltz into town and show him up and basically be like, yo, I'm the cat you always wanted me to be. I got the money. I got this. What do you need? What you want? This, that, the other thing. And completely spoil your kid.
Yeah.
Instead, now you want to go back into the arena and I don't know. What do you think you're going to, I mean, I'm not clear on what his motivation is going to be once the new season kicks in. So right. It'll be interesting to see what he does.
I mean, it sounded like he's trying to put a stop to it. You know, that was the thing. Yeah. And I'm just like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I got a feeling disgusted by the, because it's supposed to be, what I gathered mm-hmm. from the cheat sheets, or better yet, I'll be honest, from the four movies I've seen coming out of Korea, mm-hmm. from 2000, which was Musa, the Warrior, and The Kingdom with zombies in ancient Joseon era, Korean history mm-hmm. during the Joseon dynasty. This and Parasite is, you know, they talk a lot, they do a lot in terms of understanding. They give a lot of commentary in terms of Korean society and its caste system, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. Right? They don't have racism. They have like what England has in terms of class system.
Right.
You can reach it, you know, it pretty much the destruction of nature of capitalism and how it dehumanizes you. Mm-hmm. Right. It's about the dehumanization of your society, of your neighbor, of the fellow man. Mm-hmm. And you know, everything that happened, you know, says a lot about that. And you know, he's like somebody's like, I have the opportunity to fight back. Right? This is a bunch of, you know, the people who are who created and constructed this game need to be stopped. Mm-hmm. And like I said, no spoilers, we're not gonna spoil it. But it parallels a lot with our idea of progressive politics in this country, wealth inequality, and what, and if you know, in a speculative fiction kind of way, what do you do about it? You know, and his decision at the end says a lot about that, I think. I mean, I can't fault him for it. It's kind of like, you know, what good is my family if they're going to have to be, if they have to live this way all the time? If our society has to, if this is our society is going to have to put up with and live with because someone won't do anything about it. Like nothing's going to, if he doesn't do anything, nothing's going to stop somebody that he knows getting into the games, his kid getting into the game, you know what I mean? Nothing stops that because the people who are in those, because, you know, understanding the people who get into these situations are partly because of the choices they make, but also because of the economic structure of the society. Right? Shit, pandemic happened. How many people lost their jobs? Actually, no. How many people lost their lives, lost their like livelihood, or lost their homes?
Yeah.
Right, like how many homeless people we see now that weren't like, wow, there's a lot more homeless people I'm noticing now than before. Mm-hmm. What the fuck happened? Right, and you can't help but, you know, make that connection kind of. And I don't think it's a leap either. It's pretty much like, huh, this Jeff Bezos is going to the moon, and he won't help his staff and workers unionize, give him breaks. Right. Who are these billionaires that are doing this to people?
Yeah.
And why are they doing this to people? Oh, that's right. Because of capitalism. So I got to bomb the shit out of Yemen, for lack of a better term, of all places. We're not even at war with Yemen. Saudi. Why are we friends with Saudi Arabia? Wasn't Osama bin Laden a Saudi, had Saudi connections? Why the fuck are we in Afghanistan?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Cause, you know, it's those things. I'm just saying, it's,
but,
you know.
But stopping, but you know what the problem is? So I see your point, but stopping the game doesn't change because the people involved with the game weren't even from there. The people who were not, and so the problem is the people who you're going, because again, the people who are involved in the game, for whatever reason why they get there, if they have chosen, because again, like I said, they came back. The choice to come back means that I have exhausted everything that I thought I could do. And I was left with no other choice but to do this. And unless he's going to walk in there and say to everybody in the room, I have a way to help everybody here so that you don't have to do this. And.
But, you know, that's why it's like speculative fiction, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's,
no, it's pretty much, for lack of a better term, it's like almost like a superhero revenge story. It's Running Man, like you were saying at the end of Running Man. You know, he wants to destroy the game.
But you know what's interesting with the Running Man? Who destroyed the Running Man game? It was the audience. Because remember, there gets to a point where they started voting for Richard. And the guy was like, yeah, nah, we're not. Like the woman gets up and she goes, I'm voting for Richard. And he's like, no. He's a runner. You got to vote for it. She goes, nah, the hell with him. this cat is kicking his body then. I'm voting for him.
Right.
And so, that completely changed the entire dynamic of the game because now the corporation now, because here's the thing. Now what do? You can't kill him because if you kill him, that means what? What it exposes everything that you do. Yeah. So you have to they have to then change the way the game is played. And it still stays the same, you know, no matter which way you change.
I won't say anything more because if I say anything more, that's spoiler shit. But there is a way that he is on the inside now. Because he becomes an inside man. Because for winning the game. Yeah, so your audience now are other fellow. You know what? I'll just say this. It's worth watching for this just to have these conversations. It's actually worth watching. I think actually most Korean movies that have come out is worth watching. If anything else, just to understand that a lot of these directors are doing the stories that shed a light on the weaknesses of capitalism and of caste systems and of class systems, right?
I mean, and that's the thing. Speculative fiction has been doing that for decades. You know, it's always
except for Conan.
Crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of the women.
That was a straight right wing propaganda right there.
I know what you. I saw what you did.
Thank you, Professor Mark.
But I mean, you go back to They Live. You know, and the whole idea of, you know, we're putting this in front of you, and you know how many people. I mean, how many people stand on a long line waiting to buy a pair of sneakers 2, 3, 4 hours for what? You know, at the end of the day, we don't put them sunglasses back on. I said, put them glasses. I mean, we all justify. We all have a justification for anything that we do in a capitalist society. Whether it's buying something to make us feel good because we feel, you know what, if I own this, it makes me feel a certain way, or if I own this over here, it makes me better than the people over here. I saw a post the other day that somebody put up that said, I don't need to buy no more crap on the internet. And then below that statement was a samurai. Was it a samurai pen?
Yeah. I saw that one. Yeah. I did. I saw that one. That was a good one.
And it's like, damn. It's like, I need one. You know, it's like, what is that from Futurama? Shut up and take my money.
Yeah. Well, Mark, on that note, let me ask you this. Have we become a society that, and I think I already know the answer, but let's just throw it out and feed it to the sharks anyway. So we've basically come to the point where as long as you succeed in capitalism, then nothing else fucking matters, right? Because, okay, so reason is even coming to me in this particular conversation is because not too long ago, I stopped at one of my old haunts, Junior's restaurant to be exact. And yeah, you know, I'm just giving myself a nice little stress relieving beer. And I'm drinking that, and I get drawn into this conversation that I did not want to be in. But, you know, everybody was like, oh, well, you know, Steve, Black history, extra credit, blah, 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 blah. It's like, they knew me. So they start off with this whole thing. And the next thing I know, I'm debating the moral merits of all people, Don King. And there's a woman on the other side of the bar, and she's just like, oh yeah, Don King, he's one of the greatest Black men of all time, and he's this and he's that. And I'm just like, he ripped off his own people. Where's the disconnect? It's like, first of all, the fact that American boxing And don't get me wrong, I like watching a good boxing match. There was a point I was actually following boxing rather closely until, you know, recently. I could tell you, you know, who's, you know, the IBC champ, the WW, you know, I'd tell you pretty much whatever. Now, not so much, because I've just kind of moved on to other things. But, you know, this woman just like singing the praises of Don King. And I'm just like, and I'm like, wait, but he ripped off. He didn't just rip off Mike Tyson. That wasn't just like, you know, a fluke. He ripped off everybody. Famous quote from Muhammad Ali as after Larry Holmes beat the hell out of him. And he was like, look, I don't want, and Larry Holmes goes to Ali and Ali's all beaten up. you know, you're all bloody. You're all this, you're all, you know, it's like, look, you don't have to fight anymore. I give you money. And Ali supposedly says, Larry, you signed with Don King. You ain't got no money to give me. Mm-hmm. And I'm messing up the exact quote, but that's basically right. What he said. Mm-hmm. after Larry Holmes beat the hell out of him.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What was that? Like 1979, I want to say something like along those lines. So this is a long storied history. And let's not also forget Don King murdered a dude. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's like, but there are people out there that will still see a Don King as a hero, forget everything else. He made money, and it's like
I mean, but you know what? We got the look between you got your Don Kings, you got your Donald Trumps.
Yep.
Your Donald Trump, who basically, I remember seeing something at the height of all of this, a Latin American woman explaining to Joe Scarborough, you know why Latin men love Donald Trump? Because they look at him and see a success story. They don't, you can't tell those people he's not a success because he's told you he's a success. He's got this, he's got his name on stuff. You know, it's a crazy concept with capitalism because here we are. Look, as much as Jeff Bezos, this, that, the other thing, them Amazon trucks still drawing up in people's house. Yeah. And nobody stopped buying anything off Amazon.
True.
It's the crazy thing about capitalism is just it's designed that. I always say this, anybody can make money. You make money doing anything. You work at McDonald's down the street and make money. You know, it all depends on what you do with it and where and what you care to do with it. Mm-hmm. You know, the same cat that will tell one of us three, oh man, $20 for one of your books. I don't know. That's pretty steep. We'll go and walk out of GameStop. With a Sony PlayStation 5 that set him back $900, and we'll be like, "Yo, look what I got!" And it's like,
"Wait, is that what those things cost now?"
No. I'm.
I don't know. I've been kind of out of the loop.
You looking at what $599 for the system. If you decide to trick it out with getting $140 joystick and a bunch of games, could spend up to almost a grand.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, that same cat can't pay his rent, can't pay his bills, you know, cell phone shut off because X, Y, and Z. But I got that game system. I got that you remember the meme remember the meme that came out?
Yeah.
And although it was sad, it was true about the stimulus, and it was like Walmart. What was it? You got your $5.99 stimulus. Say no more. And they had all the 70-inch televisions for like $4.99. And it's like,
well, that is capitalism, isn't it? That's the dude buying let's be honest, there ain't no commercials coming on about that new book coming out that looks as flashy as the PlayStation.
Well, yeah. Right?
it's not so, you know, you can't, you know, they learn how to make money off of. And I say this, if Jeff, actually, I take that back. There's actually a billionaire who made money off of books. Jeff Bezos.
Yep.
He made so much money off of not just books, but a new way to purchase and read books without destroying the environment.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
He got that hustle. He had the hustle in, right? I mean, that's, I think that's, I mean, this is part and parcel of the capitalism way, right? I mean, you can still buy your PlayStation and stuff because let's be honest, you're keeping it. People got their freak on, right? People got their shit to go. Some cats just don't know how to talk to women so they can play video games. It's just, you know what I mean? You can't feel good about yourself if you ain't, if you can't talk to sisters, you can't be good about yourself. You play video games.
You know what you should do? You should, the next time there is, the next time at the Barclays Center, there's a video game competition like Warcraft or anything like that.
Yeah.
Go down there.
Yeah.
Wait until it's about to close and see the women that show up there.
Oh.
I have bore witness and been like, what? Yeah, because there's money.
It's a different day. It's a different day and time now. It's a different
day
and time now.
It's a different world.
When we were kids.
Your mama told you there was you were gonna rot your brain for playing video games.
Yeah.
That's what my mother said, you wasting your time playing video games. Now there's some dude selling you joysticks with 400 trophies behind them. Like,
there are dudes that out. Because the crazy thing is, then you've got these other platforms where people are watching people play video games.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know. I just did this thing a couple of weeks ago with my friends from Extra Credit. Well, you know, I was all vampired up and we did this whole role playing thing, like, you know, and like 200-300 people watched us act for 3 hours. So there's ways to do shit. Shit's changed, it's modified. It's not the old days when you went to Comic-Con or when you went to, you know, some random thing and it was just a sausage fest. No, that should change because there's a whole industry now. There's a lot of attractive women, much too young for the three of us, but they are out there and they're in these outfits and they are doing their thing.
You know, and the funny thing is, I remember, just case in point, I remember when Comic-Con, New York Comic-Con, the very first New York Comic-Con was at the Javits Center. Mm-hmm. The cat that ran that was one of us. He was a straight nerd, loved this thing. Somehow finagled his way into getting the Javits Center because the cost of that place, it got shut down by the fire marshal because all he rented out was the lower level, half of the lower level. And the fire marshal came and had shut it down because they were like, yo, you're over capacity down here. Jump. What, 5 years later, here comes Reed Expo. Like, you know, we just going to take that from you right there. And next thing you know, we paying $80 for an autograph from somebody's, $90 to take a photo with Mark Hamill, you know. And most of these cats are just like, you know what? I do it for free. I like being around my fans. I'm not trying, you know, they're not, you know, I mean, there are some that are in the hustle and they're like, yo, you know, if you don't, like Lou Ferrigno would have a sign up at his booth, like, don't take photos of me unless you're paying. Like literally, like, don't even walk by and say, if I see you, like, I'm like, I don't know what Lou gonna do to you at his age, but I mean.
But, he's still strong.
But he still got to catch you.
He got to catch you first. It's like,
you know, and he's not, he may be strong. He may have hands. He's not the actual Hulk.
But
you get to you coming anyway.
You a telephone lens and some good jogging away from a really cool ass photo. So
he might not even hear you say fuck you anyway.
Oh, but shit. You know, But the whole thing, once you got, what is that, San Diego Con, and once once Hollywood realized the value of this, here they all come in mass, you know, and people are going to pay that money. People, no matter, you know, me personally, was it Sylvester Stallone was charging $150 for a photo with him, like professional photo. I'm like, dude, I ain't that big of a fan to drop $150 to stand next to you. To stand next to you for $5.
Shit, that's light bill. $150.
But you know what?
But there are people that do it.
Who fans, you know, yeah. I've not met the, I've always wanted to meet this guy, and yada 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 yada. I mean, it's
who would you pay $150 to get a picture from?
Who would I pay $150 to take a picture with?
Yeah.
I can't even think of somebody I would pay that kind
of money. Come on, Mark.
$150 to stand next to somebody. Who?
Freddy Krueger.
No.
The original?
No. I already got three autographs from him.
Yeah, I know. But I'm just saying. Yeah. Basket case? Anybody for anybody? Really? Nobody? Argento?
Come on, I can't think of anybody. I can't think of any. If I'm going to pay $150, we're going to hang out. You going to take a picture, and for the next hour.
Wait,
I heard that.
First off, I am appalled that you do not believe that you are as charming and as erudite person as yourself cannot get that person to not only take that picture with you, but go out for drinks and coffee afterwards.
But he didn't name the person yet.
I know, but the thing, no, it don't even matter who the person is. Mark, you are that cat. Let's stop right there. Let's just give it as a given that, nigga, you're going to be like this. Yeah, I just paid $150 for so-and-so's picture. I got to go meet him at the commissary. Now we're going to have, like, cheesecake and coffee. Because you know your shit. You too, SVP. You going to tell me, because you got, come on. We all, like, just as straight fans, and the fact that, you know, we know our shit when we talk about our shit. Mm-hmm. And we have our passions. It is not unlikely that we would have that moment where we meet that person and they would be so taken by that passion and that charm and that way about us that we wouldn't be in juniors having cheesecake with these niggas.
Okay, so which nigga?
I heard you talk. I heard you. That's what I'm saying. Who you? Who would you? Dude, this is a speculative. This is speculative fiction right now. Speculate, nigga.
All right, fine.
I had a
because I got speculate. One. I got one. It ain't never gonna happen, but I got one. Christopher Lee. Who? I would pay $150 to sit down with Christopher Lee.
That's what I'm saying.
Too bad he did.
Yeah, but you know, in an alternate universe, that shit happened.
Which now that Steven said it reminds me, I need to show him the photos that I took of Christopher Lee when he came to the Fango convention when I was in high school. I was up front in the front row and took photos of him while he was talking, and didn't realize the, you know, it was one of those moments where it's like, oh, it's Christopher Lee, you know, when you're a teenager, you know, when you get older, it's like, oh my God, it's Christopher Lee. So. 150
and let's say they like you so much, they'll be like, yeah, let's go out and, you know, hey, how you doing, Mark? Let's go get a coffee or something.
Okay,
they'll do it.
If $150, James Earl Jones. James Earl Jones.
The man. Yep. Okay. Good.
Because of all of the stuff that he has done, I would sit and have an opportunity to hang with James Earl Jones.
Right.
That's a good pick. That's a solid pick.
But I'm curious about Kurt. Who would, oh,
I don't
who
know,
would
you Nick. Pay? I don't no, know.
Come on. You know, you came up with the idea. So there's somebody exactly. in your wheelhouse. There's somebody in your wheelhouse.
Asada Shakur or somebody.
Deny Gurira. Okoye from Black Panther.
We know who you're talking about, motherfucker.
So some people out there might not know who that. Yeah, like Deny Gurira. What kind of name is that?
They don't know who Deny Gurira is, and they're listening to Beef Money Shenanigans. That'd be some interesting shit right there.
Like I said, we're that kind of guy. We those kind of guys.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. Yep.
I want to say your overall motivations might be a little different than Mark's.
Wait, we're talking about motivations now? We're going to talk about motivations? And that's a fucking movie at this point. You want motivations? Shit. I'm taking a picture with a fine-ass sister with talent, and she's a writer as well and a playwright. That's a good conversation. She is a playwright. Yeah.
I can see you putting on the charm on that. Some enchanted evening, you will meet a stranger.
Ladies and gentlemen, you for the first time hear Mark say the N-word. He look at me like, nigga, is that a suit?
It'll be the first time in history Kirk will use a line straight out of Luke Cage.
Oh, shit.
And he would actually mean that line. He would be like, so you want to go get some coffee?
Oh, and you know what? And I'd swell up for that too. You want to get some coffee?
What's wrong with your chest? But stick it back in.
Exactly.
Oh.
All right. Well, fellas, first of all, it's about that time that we start hitting on the fact that we do have a sponsor of sorts, the Speculative Fiction Academy. Speaking of speculative fiction, Elle Marie Wood. She will teach you how to write. So Mark is actually he's actually spearheading a class, if I'm not mistaken.
I am.
I will eventually be taping my third installment of Whining About Movies. And I'm actually going to talk about Harder They Fall when I do that.
Nice.
So that'll be and Westerns in general, by the way. That's going to throw that little bon mot out for everybody. Exactly. That little appetizer. We always like to try to shout that out because,
Speculative Fiction Academy.
It's kind of a big deal now.
Yeah. Check it out, ladies and gentlemen. Check it out. That's good shit.
And this is also the time we generally set aside to, talk about some creative shit. Like, what are you working on now, Kirk, like writing-wise?
Writing-wise, I am working on a collection of sword and sorcery tales.
Okay.
Sword and sorcery tales that I was hoping to be out by the end of this year, but it looks like I'm pushing it to maybe, next year. I can't give you a date, but I will say it. I'm writing these stories and rediscovering what the love and passion was for sword and sorcery in the first place, like where it all come from, as well as addressing, for me at least, some of the old tropes that need to be remastered and reworked or rethought about.
Sure.
So that's something that I am working on, ladies and gents. I'll definitely give you guys a head up when I have a solid date of release and maybe even a manuscript. And I think you guys are going to love it. And it is going to be published for my new LLC, which I set up this year. Last year.
I feel like I was last year.
last year, Far Afield Press. So Far Afield Press will be officially a thing next year in terms of product. Okay. Remember that name, ladies and gentlemen, Far Afield Press.
Yes.
Far Mr. Afield Press, that's what we're doing.
Yes.
What you got on the burner there, Coach East?
So I'm actually working on a couple of short stories. One that's been, I've been messing around with it too long, but it's a modern take on the Pied Piper, which has to deal with a neighborhood that's gentrified. And as we know, most of the time when the neighborhood is gentrified, we don't find out the history about that neighborhood. And well, some things woke up. And I ain't talking about the black folk. Mm-hmm. And so this guy comes in and he's ready to help for a price, of course. And a couple of werewolf ideas that I've been away from. I've been away from the werewolf thing for a little too long. And I want to get back to the monsters and work on that. So I've got a couple of pretty interesting ideas I want to toy around with and see where they go. It's going to require some history work. What I will say is that one of the stories has to deal with werewolves and the Harlem Hellfighters. So
I like that. I like that.
So I'm working a couple of angles with that particular tale, but for the most part, I'm just still working away. I'm still working away at my thesis, really. Right. There's a book in there that's getting hammered out, and so far, it's gone through several cycles now. Mm-hmm. But I think this is the one that's, I think this version that I'm working on now will maybe be the one when all is said and done is the one I'll be shopping. But
yeah,
that's it.
All right. That's good stuff.
I like that. Yeah, man.
That's good stuff. And of course, I do have some Harlem Hellfighter research stuff laying around here someplace. So feel free to avail yourself to that as Thank necessary. You. Mm-hmm. That was actually one of my first episodes for Extra Credit.
Yeah.
I'll be able to help you out a little bit with that. Mm-hmm. As for myself, it's a little bit of everything. I got short stories that are done and being shopped, halfway done, eventually going to get shopped. My last short story that got into Under Twin Suns, the same anthology that Mark sent, that's gotten me some attention, which has been nice. another sort of a ghost story I wrote is about to pop up in another James Chambers anthology that is on its way out. You know, there'll be more announcements and proclamations about that very soon. Of course, I am still in the process of Brookwater's Curse 4. Sort of a final wrap up, I think, to my vampire series. Not to say that I'm abandoning the genre, of course, but, you know, that I definitely want to kind of, even though I kind of put a button on things in book 3, I want to put a bigger button, so to speak, on book 4. Killer Genius 3 is also being worked on. Probably a little fast. That may actually come out faster, if not only so that my friend Pat can stop asking me about it. and then there's an anthology I'm still trying to put together. And then once I do that, the proceeds of that anthology will go to the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. I just have to sit down and actually finish putting that together. So I got a lot to do. Yeah. As do we all. And then at some point, of course, gentlemen, we have to sit down and do a third installment of, you know,
Yeah, the Hell
series. Our Hell series, because yes. I'm sure America wants to know whether or not alternate universe Mark Abbott is going to drive a stake through my heart.
No, he would. Yeah, well, yeah.
I'm just saying. He may choose violence. Anyway, with all that said and done,
huh? Right. No. Hey, look, we're still working on our title. Where's it going to be this time? Helen. All right. Helen the Boroughs. Helen the Five Boroughs and shit. I don't know. That's a good question.
I don't know. Maybe we'll pick a spot in Staten Island.
I was thinking that too. Helen Wu Town.
Maybe I'll bite Curtis Sliwa.
Helen Shaolin.
Oh, well. Who knows? Yeah, we can get Ghostface Killer to come through. Never know. since we're supposed to be charming, right?
Ladies and gentlemen. Omar uses the ascot and he's on.
Doesn't his ascot have an ascot?
It does.
Yes.
It does.
Yes.
He has that much class.
Yes.
Yeah. My new phone hasn't even been made yet. So, you know.
And you know what's funny? Stupid. And you know what's funny? That reminds me, years and years and years ago, I was actually still working at MTV. This is how long ago this goes. And then we're going to get out of here. But so years and years ago, I'm at MTV. This guy, real nice VJ brother by the name of KK Holiday. He's sitting in makeup. I got to get him to set. And he's sitting there. And of course, he was an MTV VJ. So somebody remember those two-way pager flip things?
Yep.
Somebody gave him one for free, first of all. Okay. And he's sitting there in makeup and he's fucking around with this thing. And he's, you know, and he's like, yo, Steve, you got to get one of these. And I'm like, why would I get one of those? You're the only motherfucker I know that has one. I'm just going to pay some $200 for something so I can talk to you. Needless to say, the makeup people found that really, really funny. All right, folks, that's our show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Like I said, next week we have a super, super secret, super, super cool guest. And we are going to, let's just say there's going to be some stuff dropped on the information tip, on the, just under the hood of how evil people operate type shit. We about to get some scoop up in this joint. And that's it. For Beef, Wine, and Shenanigans, I'm Steve Van Patten. For Kirk Johnson and Mark Abbott, that's a good night, America.